Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. 40% of married couples with children in this country are step couples, meaning that at least one partner brought a child from a previous relationship into the marriage. As most people can imagine, merging children into a new relationship can sometimes be pretty tricky. Today we'll explore this idea from the kids' perspective as well as from the adults, and we'll try to figure out how to make these merged families successful families. With us once again is Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a board-certified family psychologist and author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. He writes a weekly column in the Lawrence Journal World and will soon be seen on the pages of Our Teen magazine. He has offices in Lawrence and Prairie Village. Dr. Wes specializes in working with teens and young adults. And Wes, always good to have you here.
And it's great to be here, as always.
And joining him here in the studio is Ryan Liston. He's a senior at Free State High School in Lawrence, and he's a writer for the Free State Free Press. And Ryan, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Well, Wes, in your column, you write this: some folks still like to pin all manner of societal ills on divorce and broken families. I found this interesting. In reality, you say, most childhood struggles in these homes don't come from the divorce itself, but from how parents separate and conduct themselves in the years afterwards. Nowhere is that more critical than when step-parents enter the picture. So what's the most common thing that tends to go wrong in these new families?
Yeah, it's so common that you'll have a divorce that has gone pretty well, and the kids have made it into the two homes, and they have a shared parenting plan, and they go back and forth. And everybody's like, yeah, this is all right. And then someone remarries. And even the person coming into the relationship thinks, oh, what a great situation this is. Look how these guys get along.
For a day or two.
That's right. And they join up, and the influence and existence of the step-parent changes that dynamic completely on both sides of the divorce equation. And so the primary – there are more ways to fail at this. I always say there's like 60 ways to fail at step-parenting and about three to succeed.
So the odds are not going in the right direction.
That's right. And the worst thing that adds to that is that people get that equation backwards. They think, oh, you know, there's probably only two or three things I can do wrong. Mm-hmm. And at the top of the list of things that people make a mistake with right out of the chute is either the step parent coming into the relationship sees themselves as a primary parent, or the biological parent asks them to be that person.
Some people, an equal partner where it comes to disciplining kids and everything else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And some people will go out. And it tends to be a little more common for men in a divorce, but I've seen it absolutely with women. We'll go out and marry someone with the purpose of having a co-parent in their home. And that seems so logical until it really happens and you see all of the problems that come with it.
Well, it doesn't work well. Why? I mean, what's the issue here? There's a new parenting relationship here. Why does it go so wrong so quickly?
Well, and to be clear, I have, and Ryan will share some experiences of excellent step-parenting examples. There are people who
it can
this.
Work, Ryan.
Sure.
You're saying there's good news out there. Okay.
Which is part of the reason I asked him to be on today. Mm-hmm. But in our discussions here, we always try to troubleshoot the things that aren't working. And so what typically goes wrong is that when you imbue the new step-parent, or the new step-parent takes on this role of a primary parent, this not only undercuts the biological parent's relationship to whom that person is married, but worse, it threatens and tends to undermine the relationship with the parent, the other biological parent in the other home. Mm-hmm. And competitions begin to happen that the child absolutely picks up on. Kids pick up on these things intuitively, and they begin to pull against that step parent, and the step parent doesn't even realize why that's happening.
In other words, in some cases, the biological mom is competing with the new stepmom. If that's the gender relationship here, that's what begins to happen.
Exactly. And that is as gender neutral as it can be. You will see this with both genders of parents, people who are disrespecting, if you will, a step parent, in part to point out, you're not my dad. How many times have we heard that line in mm-hmm. the media or in shows? You're not my dad. And sometimes, depending on the storyline, that's really designed, you know, it's kind of a way that the child is struggling and we see the child having sort of a breakdown and they grow up and become okay about that. Usually that's a protest. And mm-hmm. when you hear that, it's probably because the step is exerting more authority than is rightly due them. That's really the job of the biological parent, to be that authority.
We're talking Brady Bunch stuff here, right? That's sort of where we're going. I mean, not exactly, but that's the surface sort of picture we're looking at here. This situation strikes me as so fraught with peril and tension and good intentions that probably will go quickly awry. It's almost anything I can imagine in the world of families, I guess.
Well, that I think I'll write a book and you can write the foreword.
Yeah, that's what I'd say, right?
That is actually such a good foreword for the whole show, because it is people's good intentions. If I'm if I'm four men living all together, yet we're all alone from the Brady Bunch, what do I want to do? I want to reach out and find Florence Henderson to come to my home and parent my children. Let's remember the key element in that show, which is famous. Do you know what the Brady Bunch is, Ryan?
Yeah, I know it, but I've never actually seen it.
Don't. Yeah. You don't need to. Don't get it on
not
Netflix.
Not applicable here, probably. Yeah.
But you have to remember, in that scenario, they went out of their way to make sure both of those people were widowed. So there is no competition. And in cases, and I have them, where the parent dies young, and the other parent remarries, it is technically a step-parent relationship, that often changes that dynamic because there is no competition.
That's interesting.
There's still an issue of taking over for someone's dead parent and not being carefully respectful of that.
Yeah.
But it is a different dynamic for exactly that reason.
Well, let me bring Ryan Liston into our conversation here. Again, he's a senior at Free State High School over in Lawrence. And Ryan, why don't you begin by just telling us what your own situation has been when it comes to the world of step parenting. What have you encountered in your young life here?
Well, you know, my parents got divorced when I was pretty young. I think I was around 5 years old. And my stepdad didn't come into the equation really until I was, oh gosh, I can't remember exactly what age, but it was a few years later. And I just remember, you know, at first it was kind of weird, because I didn't really understand the whole situation since I was so young, didn't understand what was going on.
You were 7, 8 years old. Yeah.
Didn't understand the divorce and then the remarriage and all that. But, you know, so at first, I mean, there wasn't necessarily – I feel like my stepdad did a good job of coming in and not starting off as, like, super strict, you know, get down and on top of, you know, me and start – laying down rules or anything.
He left that to your mom pretty much. I get that you're living with your mom.
Yes, my mom and my stepdad, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he did a good job with that. I mean, on occasion we've had, you know, instances where it's sort of not recently ever, but like in the first few years there were instances where I was kind of like, why is this guy here? You know, he's not my actual dad. But as the years have gone on, he is like, I don't see necessarily the divorce as a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as sort of like it brought in more people to support me.
Oh, that's
and
interesting.
So, mm-hmm. Like my stepdad and my mom, I'm on the cross country team at Free State, and my stepdad and my mom will come to as many meets as they can. And I know for a while, like only my mom would be at the meets, and my mom, I can hear her voice over anyone else in the crowd on the sides. And then my stepdad comes and he's even louder, and it's just insane. Because, I remember the first meet he came to, my mom and my stepdad were both cheering. I heard my mom at first, and then I hear my stepdad just roaring on the sideline, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So that was really fun. And so basically, you know, and my stepmom also, I don't live with her as much, obviously, but she is also very supportive of me. And so I feel like having step-parents and blended families is just sort of, in my case, has been beneficial. Just because it adds more people into
that's
the
such
equation.
An interesting thought, and good for you, and you know, having such a positive experience here. As you've talked to friends who maybe have gone through similar situations, mm-hmm. are you an outlier here in terms of a positive experience, or have they also had positive experiences?
You know, I obviously, I have a lot of friends who have step-parents and blended families as well because of the 40% of families and whatnot. But a lot of the time, it does seem like the teenager or the children in the equation don't respect the step-parent as much. And so it kind of makes me feel like I am one of the luckier people. I know there are some people who are fine with their step-parents, obviously, like me. But a lot of my friends, it seems like, have more of a problem with it than anything. And they just sort of say, like, oh, gosh, she's coming in or whatever. If it's a stepmom, like, she's coming in and she's trying to take over my life. And, like, she doesn't understand who I really am as a person, you know. And so
maybe too assertive too quickly.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Sort of, I'm hearing you right.
Yeah.
And Wes, as I'm saying those words, you're nodding your head. That oftentimes, that's a common issue here, I'm gathering.
Well, everything Ryan said is just so pregnant with possibility to discuss. That is the ideal scenario that he just described. And I want to hit some of the points about why, because you so articulately laid it out there.
Yeah.
First, people come in with young kids and they're talking about divorce. And if we really come to the realization that this is not the right marriage, it is better to get divorced before your kids are out of elementary school.
You said that repeatedly.
I have.
In the
every
years on
time
the show.
We have discussed it. And Ryan is a great example why, and he's nodding too. And Ryan actually, when Kyra Haas was out recruiting for this show, my co-author, who is a godsend to us for finding wonderful teenagers to work with, she told me that was one of the things he had said to her was that he thought it had worked best because he was so young. Then there was time elapsing between the time the divorce happened and a new person was introduced into the family.
Mm-hmm.
It is
in fact several years.
Yes,
a little while
few
ago.
Years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a buck for every time people did not wait long enough to do this, I would be quite wealthy. And sometimes we'll talk about this a little more. Sometimes they don't wait at all. Sometimes a step-parenting relationship comes out of an affair. And that's a whole story in and of itself we'll talk about. Then what Ryan talked about is how the new step-parents didn't come in all gung-ho. This is such a common mistake to do it otherwise. They come in and they believe, particularly if it's a male, but absolutely in cases with female step-parents, they come in and they are now large and in charge. And they're going to – you know, they know better apparently. And that doesn't work for the other reason Ryan said, which is they don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
Your parent, you know, you like popped out of there at 0 years of age and you had to get your diaper changed and they learned when you cried and they saw you walk. And they have all these experiences that add up to a what we call mind mapping, where you kind of understand a person's way of being intuitively. Step-parents need to come into these situations humble that they don't have that mind mapped already and mm-hmm. spend a lot of time working on that first.
We're talking about step-family, step-parents, the relationship with their kids. If you want to join our conversation with your own experience, we'd love to hear from you. A few real-life examples would help a lot here. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Amy from Overland Park. Amy, thank you for calling in. Nice to have you.
Hi. Okay, so I am one of three kids, and my parents are divorced. They've been divorced for 22 years, and I'm 33 now. And my husband and I have been married for 10 years, and before we got married, we agreed that we were never going to get divorced. And we've gone through marriage counseling and individual counseling and anger management and all kinds of things to deal with all of the baggage from our past. And his parents are divorced, too, and we both went through horrific step-parenting experiences to the point where we both are sterilized, where if anything ever happens, neither one of us can have a new family because we had that situation too, where you get replaced. We have a deal where we never get remarried if one of us passes or something else happens, which is the only thing that I can think of, that, you know, you have girlfriends or boyfriends, but they're not allowed to have dominion over your children. They're not allowed to live in my house. There's no way. I wouldn't put my kids through what I went through. And his stepfather was horrific in separating him from his mother. And I have a stepmother who was 23 when she married my father, who was almost 40. And I have a 17-year-old, or no, I'm sorry, a 19-year-old half-sister. And when that happens, I feel like I'm going to say this, like when you decide you're going to start a new family, it's a really selfish decision, in my opinion, because you literally are saying, well, I'm going to start over with this other person, and I'm sorry, guys, but you guys don't count as much. And that's exactly what ends up happening to the children from the first relationship. They get replaced. And anybody who says otherwise is either not dealt with it or just is too selfish to realize that.
Hey, that's my personal opinion. Hang on the line for me a minute, because you're making so many interesting points here. Wes, weigh in.
Well, I'm glad we had Ryan tell his story first. That is the opposite end of the spectrum. I do see it all the time. And this young woman is speaking as an adult from a historic experience that I've heard many times. She brings up an interesting point that I actually should have written into some of our notes for today to talk about. So thank you for bringing it up. The starting of the new family. And I thought I had these things thought out pretty well. You and your spouse could write the book. This business of starting a second family is a tricky one, and I would not go as far as you do in saying that it is selfish. It is often not well thought out. It is difficult to sell the idea to the existent kids if they are, say, 14 or 15 in a very critical year that they should now have some, you know, baby brothers and sisters. And I think people don't spend enough time thinking it through and developing a culture that's going to receive new children effectively. Steve said that it's a complex issue of blending families. You just described one of the exponential increases in that complexity. So I wouldn't tell people not to do it. I would tell people to sit down and think about it like you have thought through your commitment to your marriage and the kind of time you've said you're going to spend making sure it works.
Amy, just give us a sense, maybe one or two points here. What went so wrong for you in the course of this whole thing?
Oh, boy, Steve's going to open up the can of worms, isn't he?
Yeah, just opened it up.
I know where this is going.
My dad, my mother was never remarried, and I thank her like no other that she didn't bring somebody else into the house. She's an incredible woman, but my father started dating right away, and
there's one mistake.
You know, he not only was he dating, he moved in and he got this girl pregnant who was, like I said, 23, and he was in his late 30s at the time.
There's another mistake.
Yeah.
Right. They got married, and my sister and I were old enough to babysit. So we went over basically to be the de facto free babysitters so that they could have their life. And then we just stopped going, and I'm the only one who communicates with them.
And there was three mistake right there is when I say they didn't think it out very well, telling you, okay, this is now your job for little children that you didn't show an interest in having.
Right. And the worst part is that I love my little sister. She's my half sister. But because I couldn't stand her mother when I was a child, I have a very sketchy relationship with her until she moves out of the house because I don't want to see my stepmother. So it's absolutely destroyed any chance at all these different things, which I'm trying to work through all this. Eventually it'll get to the point. But I've forgiven my father because he's now in his seventh marriage, and that's a whole other story.
And that's mistake number four.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot there. But anyways, so I just have been really paranoid about that, and my husband is too, and I think that's why. What always amazes me is that I have so many friends who get married, have a huge wedding when they're young, and they're married for a couple years, and they get divorced, but their parents fought like heck to stay married. And they're like, oh, all my friends who are, you know, children of divorce, they're fine. Their adjustments are fine. And they're not even considering, like, you have any idea what they went through to stay married? Do you have any idea how hard that is? So I just wish it were harder to get married so that it's, you know. Anyways, thank you.
Amy, I'm really glad you called. Thank you. Ryan, go ahead and hop in here.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to just say that obviously I've experienced sort of an opposite side to that. And with my the way my situation worked out, it was definitely like he came in when I was younger, which kind of made it better because I wasn't fully aware of every little detail of what was going on. But I feel like I love my stepfather and I love my stepmother. I love being part of a blended family for me has been only beneficial. And I know that my mother without my stepfather would have been struggling to raise us. And so him coming in has made us a lot more well off than we would have been in the first place. So the stance I have on it is that, like, without him, I don't know if I'd even have, like, the same opportunities I do today. I don't know what my life would be like, but I don't see it being any better than
it
is.
That's really interesting. You know? I thought Amy's point, Wes, that she said, you know, she felt like the children who were there first got replaced by the new family. And what a horrible, horrible idea that is.
Well, and again, it's just – I think we have such a good – yin and yang here to hear Amy's story and Ryan's story. Ryan's is extremely great. Mm-hmm. Amy's is extremely awful. And most of the stories lie somewhere in between. But the points each is bringing up about how to succeed and how to fail are the right points. Ryan's family went into it intentionally with forethought and did their new marriage in an effective way. And Amy's dad did not. And one of the biggest mistakes people make, well, there are a couple of them. The first one is, if I could get any message out to people today, I would beg them to think twice before they start having an extramarital affair. And if they're going to start having it, and that's not me moralizing, that's me sitting in a chair watching stuff go bad. And if they're going to have an extramarital affair, the secret is to be sneaky. It is not a way to find a new mate. And if you're going to find a new mate, if you're going to divorce your spouse and get a new mate, those need to be what we call statistically orthogonal. They need to be completely separate processes. It is a disaster for a 13 or 14-year-old kid to realize or to know in the process that their new step-parent is the product of an extramarital affair against their mom or dad.
Yeah.
So that's the first mistake. The second mistake right behind that is waiting, you know, you're tapping your watch, waiting for the divorce to finalize. And the day it finalizes, you head out to plentyoffish.com and you get on there and you find your – please don't get on Plenty of Fish, anybody. And you
I've never heard of Plenty of Fish.
This is the freebie dating site.
Yeah, I need to get on this.
I'm going to call Katie. It's the opposite of, say, eHarmony, which you pay for and, you know, it has this matching algorithm. It's this, like, cheap site. And they get on there and they find him a dating partner. And my gosh, they move in 2 weeks later. And when you have children, you have to give up a part of yourself, the free and easy part, the part that gets to just do whatever you want. And I resonate with what Amy says about selfishness in that you just have to think first about kids. And that includes when you're divorcing and going on. It can turn out like Ryan's situation. It can turn out like Amy's. It's your choice.
Well, again, let's get our listeners involved here. We're looking for your experiences. If you've been involved in a step family, what worked well, what didn't? 816-235-2888. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about all this with Dr. Wes Crenshaw and Ryan Liston. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking about step families, step couples, step kids, how these relationships work, what keeps them from working well. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a board-certified family psychologist. He's author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. And joining him today is Ryan Liston. He's a senior at Free State High School in Lawrence who had a very good experience. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. You wrote in the column, Wes, that nobody gets the command respect from anybody. So you're saying that step-parents shouldn't believe they can come in and tell the child, you have to respect me.
Yeah, this is true in any parenting situation. Power does not come from what we refer to as legitimate power. I am the parent, so you do what I say. Mm-hmm. Now, we can hallucinate and believe that that's true or there's some tradition historically. But if you go back to the 50s and you watch movies like East of Eden and Rebel Without a Cause, and all of those movies came out at a time when people were allegedly these very respectful Leave It to Beaver people.
Yeah.
And the reality is every one of those movies and a bunch of others are about conflict between children and their parents because parents are expecting and demanding mm-hmm. kids to be these respectful citizens when it, in fact it's the point of adolescence to be pulling away from the parent. That becomes amplified in the power struggle of the step-parent because the step-parent assigns some incorrect what we call attributions or mm-hmm. meanings to that. They assign a personal meaning that you're disrespecting me, you know, like at a deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts off the conflict. And so they do all these things to force someone to respect them, which typically ends up more like being about fear,
mm-hmm.
not about really having a sense of wanting to emulate that person. When Ryan talks about his feelings about his stepdad and stepmom, it's more about being respectful of them, like he would like to be like those people. He would mm-hmm. like to emulate them. That's truly what respect is about.
You know, Ryan, over the years, I assume there must have been some conflict at one point or another. When those things would come up, how did you deal with it as the years progressed? I mean, would you sit down with your biological mom, your mom, and talk to her about this? Or would you sit down with your dad? Or how did you work through it?
Usually I would talk to my mom. Like, mm-hmm. She's been – since I've lived with her longer than anyone else, she's really the one I go to when I have problems of any sort. And especially, like, with step-parenting, if we ever had – I mean, we've never had a problem that was so large that it took longer than, like, even just 24 hours or 48, you know, a couple days at the most. I mean, if anything, it's just an argument that, like, me and one of my step-parents got into that made me or them a little upset or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. We've never had any serious problems, basically. But whenever there is even, you know, a little problem, I typically talk to my mother about
Not to pry too far here, but mm-hmm. can you characterize for me what kinds of issues might have come up? I mean, were there times where you thought your stepdad was asserting too much authority, you know, his disciplinary or whatever, or was it something else completely?
Yeah, it was sort of a little disciplinary. I remember one time when I wanted to, like, go out and hang out with someone, and this is just kind of a little silly example, but still, I mean,
yeah.
And
they're always silly examples.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
in hindsight,
welcome to my household. Yeah,
exactly. But basically, I wanted to do something, and he was like telling me no, and I asked for his reason, and I didn't really understand it. And then he told me like that I had gotten too emotional about it, and then we kind of just started arguing over it. And basically, at the end of all that, we both apologized. I apologized for being like a little too, you know, sort of
yeah.
trying to assert my own position as like, hey, you should let me do what I want no matter what or no matter when. And he apologized for being a little too hard on me with my response.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
So
how can step families work better? How can you round the corner and make that kind of situation work? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Karen from Leavenworth. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. I may have missed a little piece because I had to leave the car for a minute, but it had to do with the assertion that the step-parent in the family has no rights for disciplining the children in the home.
Right.
They're not their own. They're stepchildren.
That's a big point we're talking about here, yeah.
Right, and I don't know if it got answered or discussed further. I'm really sorry about that. But what I was trying to say is that when I got married 9 years ago, the house became mine too. We came together. In fact, I gave up my home to move in with him so that his kids could stay in school. And then, of course, if I'm running my household like, you know, most people do, it's my house, too. So, yes, they do have to follow the rules. And when I came into the marriage, there was no discipline because he was, you know, primary and custodial parent, constantly in battle with the ex-wife. So, you know, they had the whole playing the two of them against each other and everybody ganging up on him. Well, when I came in, he was relieved that finally someone could get a handle on things. I'm not saying it's gone well. One of them still lives with us and still won't listen to either one of us. But, you know, I'm just saying that I guess I have a major problem with saying that if you have two adults who come together to form a family, whether they both have children or only one of them or whatever, you have equal say in the disciplining of the children to a certain extent as far as following the rules that you both decide are for your house.
So I was going to ask you how things turned out, but I won't pry too deeply.
It's an ongoing process a little bit.
Yeah. So I understand how you feel as the step-parent in that situation. The reality is if you marry someone who cannot enforce discipline with their children, good luck. You cannot move in and solve that problem. And if I were dating, because my wife actually doesn't let me do that, but if I were dating at this point and I was dating a woman who was not able to assert reasonable discipline with her kids, and the way I define discipline is that she had a plan for how she wanted them to be and was able to enforce that and understand that kids are going to deviate from that because that's what kids do, but she was mostly in charge, I would not marry her because I know factually that I would not be able to go in and say, okay, you know, I'm Dr. Wes, I'm sure you've read my books, and I know the right way to parent. And so kids line up kind of like in the Trap Family and mm-hmm. Sound of Music. Mm-hmm. And so while I have rights in that home, and other people, if I'm the step parent, other people should not impinge on my rights, my number one goal in that scenario needs to be to work with my spouse, the biological parent of the children, to become an effective disciplinarian.
Yes, I have done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not get blamed for it.
Well, I still get blamed for it, but I'm tough. I can handle it.
Yeah.
And I have two grown daughters who, you know, are older than them. So I had done it, been there. It helped him to have someone back him up because he is not a disciplinarian. He was too busy trying to keep them happy against the other parents. You know, so
that situation for you, though, Karen, was so fraught with peril. At least that's how it strikes me. And
yeah.
I'm wondering, how did the kids respond to you sort of coming in and then immediately assuming that role? I assume that was pretty rough going.
It was gradual, but it's always been kind of rough. But I still, with my husband and I working together on most things and him listening to reason and things and then him dealing with them directly, there are some things I say, hey, this can't be done this way, or we need to do these things this way, or no, you're not allowed to do that. But most of the time, if it's something I need to have them do or understand or mm-hmm. be reprimanded for or whatever, I let him do it.
And that's
one of them
a good
is gone
plan.
And has his own family now, but the other one is 22 and still living with us and has issues. So, We finally sort of worked part of it out, but I'm just saying that I always let them know from the beginning, hey, sorry, but we are the grown-ups here, and this is my house. I'm, you know, the whole, I probably said something once or twice about we pay the mortgage here, not you, you know, because you're your parents getting out of your mouth.
Karen, hang on, let Ryan weigh in here again real quick,
Well, I think there might have been a misconception in what we were talking about earlier. It's not necessarily that the step-parent has no form of discipline in the relationship. It should be that it's sort of gradual. I know that's how it was for me. He didn't come in and lay down the law. He came in and kind of gradually worked up. And I respect my stepfather, because I'm talking about him mostly because I live with him most of the time. And so he gained my respect, basically, by being sympathetic, you know, understanding, and by coming in with an open mind as to how things should be run. And he didn't assume the role of disciplinarian or, you know, and my mom also did not assume the role of, you know, doormat getting stepped on. They both worked together. And that's really the thing is, like, you have to talk with each other in a relationship like that and decide how you're going to sort of ingrain the new person into the equation. And it has to be slower. It can't just be immediately you come in and you are now the disciplinarian in the family. There has to be some sort of transitional.
And so,
things.
Ryan, when you're talking about gradual, you're talking about, I'm hearing you say, I'm assuming here, months and maybe even years.
Yes.
As opposed to days or hours.
Yeah, no, right? Yes. Years is definitely. It took, I mean, I respected my mom's decision the entire time, but at first, you know, he was a new face in the house. I didn't really understand what was going on. And it took years until I really fully, I think, respected him.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, he's just another one of my parents. I just listen to him. Yeah. And, you know, we do things that parents and children do together, you know, obviously have arguments and disagreements, but also work together and understand each other.
And so, Wes, when I said months and years, you were nodding your head vigorously. That's what we're talking about here. This is a long, this is a marathon. This is not a sprint.
And I feel for her position in that. And I think I stated pretty clearly where the problem is if a biological parent does not have a good relationship and discipline with their kids, a step parent is not going to solve that usually because the world is not the Sound of Music. Mm-hmm. And what I think what's so golden in Ryan's point is people in every parenting relationship, we've said it many times, here we are again, kids follow the people they want to emulate. They follow the people they want to be like, not the people they like, the people they want to be like. Mm-hmm. The first goal of parenting, whether it's a step or a bio parent, is to form a relationship with the kids. If you've done that over the course of 3, 5, 10, 12 years, hopefully you have formed that relationship where you can influence the child. A step parent cannot possibly hope to come in to a situation cold and have that relationship with the kids. So they have to work on it in the way you two were just talking about so that at some point they can be influential. But if the bio parent isn't carrying 90% of the load of that, it's going to kind of be a mess.
That's interesting.
And I get paid a lot when that happens. So
the challenges of step families is our topic today. The challenges of being a step parent, a step child, 816-235-2888. What worked well in your situation? What didn't work so well? 816-235-2888. Let's go to Greg from Waldo. Greg, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Good morning. I came into step parenting after my partner and now husband, and we dated for 3.5 years before I moved into the house.
Good job. Well done.
He had two daughters from a previous marriage. They had been divorced before he even came out. But when I moved in, his younger daughter was just turning 16. His older daughter had just left for college.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't the time to, you know, to build the relationship. So my approach, not having kids myself, was to stay away from the discipline part and to let him do that. Unless it was, you know, there are a couple of occasions that he made what I thought were pretty egregious bad decisions, you know, and I would step into that. But for the most part, I would let him decide, you know, how he was going to discipline in those decisions. And then, you know, if I didn't agree, we would discuss it afterwards.
Perfect layout, perfect strategy.
Hey, Greg, how difficult was that for you to sort of defer discipline to your partner, the natural father? How tempting was it for you to want to weigh in more quickly from time to time?
It was very tempting. It was not easy a lot of the time because he's not a disciplinarian. He's a, you know, he's a pleaser. And so it's, you know, it was his, you know, his approach was to discuss and to compromise and, you know, by my upbringing, again, not having kids of my own, I had to defer to how I was raised. And, you know, it was really much more of a, I'm the adult, I'm the parent, I pay the bills, and, you know, so what I say goes.
Yeah.
So it was difficult to stay out of that. And again, there were times that that I thought, you know, that's a really bad decision and I had to say something. But for the most part, I stayed out of it. The biggest challenge I had was the idea that we had a shared income, therefore we had shared expenses, and anything that the kids got was, you know, partly I was paying for. But to be able to do that and not feel like I have bought or earned, you know, the right to decision because I'm paying the bills. And that was tough, but that's, you know, that's how we just had to approach it.
Yeah. And the fact that you are gay, Greg, how did that go with the kids? Was that an issue or not?
It probably was initially. Again, I actually, when we met, I was living out of town, and so, you know, we dated at a distance for, you know, for quite a while. The 16-year-old, in addition to just turning 16 and the evils that come with that, she was also dealing with coming out herself.
Okay. I was going to ask you if your husband was out to the family well in advance of this, you two dating and coming together. Was he out?
Yes, they were. They were actually, they divorced because it was just not a good marriage for them.
Okay.
And so it had nothing to do with his sexuality. He actually came out. He didn't come out until a couple years after they divorced, and it was probably another 2 or 3 years after that before we met and started each other. So there was a long time frame there. But again, what that created was a situation where the kids were already teenagers and into adulthood. So there wasn't the opportunity from him being children to recognize me.
Right.
So even now, I don't really see our relationship as a father-daughter relationship as much as a close friendship. And it's all worked out great. We all get along really well. And I'm really proud of them and glad to be in their lives, but I don't really consider myself truly a father to them.
That's a great phone call. And sort of the degree of modesty and the humbleness in Greg's comments, I thought came through so clearly, Wes, which is what you've been advocating here today.
I agree, Greg. It really shows through this idea of being the adult friend. And I understand it's very different than an earlier caller. The best thing you can do is have a strong parent, bio parent, and then the step parent can be an adult friend. And I don't mean take them to Disney World or Worlds of Fun and give them a lot of money and please like me. I don't mean that. I mean to be an advisor to say, hey, I'm here if you need me. And then to some degree behind the scenes, like Greg said, to say to the biological parent, are you sure you're handling this the right way? Because you don't want to get tagged as that person who showed up and made dad turn into an ogre.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the same problem as just taking that role yourself.
Yeah.
But I think being able to sit down and give an objective opinion and say, I think you're just giving them too much money or, you know, whatever it may be, that's a good way to have that dialogue behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Step parenting is our topic. Mary Jean from Lenexa is on the phone with us now. Mary Jean, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for bringing this topic to bear. It's been great.
Good to have you, Mary Jean.
Yeah, I remarried 13 years ago and was dating my husband about a year prior. But I asked him before we got married, would you be willing to go through counseling to help us combine our family? And he agreed to that, and I think that helped tremendously in helping us navigate his daughter and my two sons, one of which has Asperger's syndrome, which is a whole other dimension.
And what are the ages involved here in your kids, Mary Jean?
They are now 26, 25, and, 22.
So they're all, yeah.
And that was 13 years ago, you said?
So they were teenagers.
That's correct.
Yeah, uh-huh. I got to give you a lot of credit, and I know
it's a bite of the apple, isn't it?
I always sort of jokingly say I'm not trying to just be the evangelist for therapists here. Lord knows I am busy enough with both of these offices now, but I tell divorcing people and I tell teenagers and young adults I see a great question for a dating partner that you're considering being exclusive with. Is to say, if when we get into conflict, will you freely go to the therapist to resolve it? And let me give you a hint as to what the correct answer is. Yes. The answer is yes. And people who say, no, I would never do that, when the chips are down and it's fourth down and 40 yards, they're going to punt. Yeah. And the people who need to really – it's such a good question you asked, and particularly given the issues you brought up, I think the people who say, sure, if we need to go to the therapist, I'm happy to do so, are the ones who predispose themselves to a successful remarriage.
Yes, and he did. He's been a tremendous partner to my children and their helper. And, you know, it's worked out well. It certainly had its challenges. But I think the advantage of going to a counselor from the beginning when things are good is that relationship is already established.
Yes.
And it doesn't feel weird to go when it's difficult.
John Gottman's research, and he is the gold standard for research on marriage, finds that people wait an average of 6 years too long to go to marital therapy. And he believes that
six years,
it contributes to the divorce rate. Now, that's gotten better. Younger people are so much more people Ryan's age. I have trouble. I have to refer people to my associates routinely because I get too mobbed up in their friend groups because they all refer to me. And so we have to spread that out over some different associates. But so this age group is much more adroit at using therapy. But that's a good thing to know. Don't wait too long in a marriage to see the therapist.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you,
Mary Jean. Thank you for the call.
Great call.
You know, this notion, Wes, we're talking here about the importance of counseling, that the importance of going slow with discipline as the new family forms, as the new spouse comes into this to the family. Is there anything else that might be useful advice for to accommodate a new family coming together? Are we missing anything here?
Well, yeah, there's like 90 more.
Well,
let's just cancel the rest of the shows today from the network, and we'll just continue on endlessly. I think that one of the things that people can do that are in the other side of the family. So let's use Ryan's example just to make it clear. So if Ryan's mom, with whom he lives, when she learns that his dad is going to remarry, coming at that with a positive attitude helps a lot.
Mm.
This is why the gosh darn affair situation creates such a problem. If Ryan's dad had an affair, which did not happen, by the way, Ryan's dad had an affair with somebody in his hospital and moved in with her or married her, it's going to be really hard for Ryan's mom to look at that and be like, Ryan, I want you to really give her a good try, give her a good run. She can say that, but Ryan's going to look in her tearful eyes and think, you're lying, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
So barring some circumstance like that, in our little narrative, Ryan's mom really needs to be supportive and be like, hey, give her a good try. Think when you're there, think of her as being the as if she were me. You know, think take the same attitude towards who you would with me. Those kind of things help when the you get these situations where, for whatever reason, Ryan's mom in our little story is like, well, I just can't believe he married somebody like that, and she just isn't good to you, and maybe we should just go to court and just get you so I have sole custody. That doesn't go well.
Yeah.
So
how did it work for you, Ryan, and along those lines?
You know, my dad was actually – he's been remarried twice, so he's on his third wife now, which – but she's amazing. She's an amazing woman. His second wife, my mom said, like, after they had gotten divorced and all that, she said she didn't really particularly like the second wife, but she wasn't going to, like – tell that to me or my older brother or my younger sister, because then that would obviously be kind of unfair.
Right.
You know, she'd be giving us a predisposition on how we should interact with her or feel about her.
Right.
And so, you know, she basically lets us come up with our own opinion. She tells us, you know, he this is his decision. My dad's, obviously. This is your dad's decision. And, you know, just work with it and, you know, basically just you're along for the ride.
Well, and the flip side of that is if your mom – and these are all made up. I'm just using you as an example.
Yeah.
If your mom really feels an injustice is being done to you by a step-parent or parent, finding a way to intervene in that diplomatically is perfectly appropriate.
Yeah.
Get one more phone call here. Ellen from Kansas City North. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And I want to shout out to Dr. Crenshaw for his citations in Family Circle this month.
Oh, did that come out this month? You're the first person to tell me.
Yeah, that's out. But at any rate, the reason I'm calling is I'm really calling about my own experience as a stepchild. And my father died in the mid-50s, and about 2 years later, my mother remarried. And things were fine then, and they made arrangements. It took a while, and my second father legally adopted me. And I did have some memories of my first father. I don't say birth father because mm-hmm. that kind of implies he wasn't around. And at any rate, though, the real stress for me came from my adoptive dad's extended family.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really accept me, and it became really
wow.
clear after my younger half-brother was born. And he was the golden child, and so that's all I really have to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a tough way to end this show.
So many dynamics mm-hmm. like that that come into play. You said it right at the opening, that it adds a level of complexity. And as humans, we can learn to manage that, but the key element there is learning.
Yeah. Wes Crenshaw has offices in Lawrence and Prairie Village. Wes, always good to have you here.
See you next month.
And Ryan Liston did a great job. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
In.
You
so
did.
Good to have you. Nice to meet you.
Thanks. Nice
yeah.
to meet you too, Steve.